This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
I'm Noomi Gilder.
I'm Harriet Taylor.
And you're listening to Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief.
Our picks of this week's tech headlines.
And what we think of them.
We're aiming for 50% informative, 50% fun.
Let's dive in. Welcome back to another weekly debrief from Tech Girl Energy. I'm Noomi.
I'm Harriet.
How are you today?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm ready. I'm
excited. I think we've got some really good stories this week.
Yeah, so let's dive straight in. You're going to take the first one.
Yeah, so kicking us off, we've got Hyundai has basically decided that they would do a bit of user testing and try and work out whether people enjoyed having the touchscreens in their vehicles or cars or not. So they basically said, as they were adding integrated infotainment screens in the vehicles, they also tried putting touchscreen-based controls, and people didn't like that. And they found that in the first focus group, people got stressed, annoyed, and steamed when they want to control something in a pinch but are unable to do so.
I really enjoy the quote that it's stressed, annoyed, and steamed. Do you have, well, you're currently in the market for a new car, Harriet, so maybe touch the subject, but your old car, did your old car have a touchscreen?
No, so it didn't. So I had a very, very old, like 2012 Vauxhall Corsa, and it didn't even have Bluetooth. So I had one of those little devices that you plug in that kind of like creates Bluetooth, shall we say, so I could actually use it. But after that, I had a higher car, and it was also a Vauxhall Corsa. It was 2023, and that one did have the touchscreen stuff, but it didn't have the physical buttons. It was all touchscreen, and I kind of get where they're coming from. Half the time, I guess I did have sort of like buttons and controls on the steering wheel that were really like easy to use. But if I was ever trying to do something on the touchscreen, like I felt like it wasn't always tracking where my finger was going.
I think it's something about, I think, when you're driving a car and maybe the way that you're sat and your distance from the screen, it's so hard to touch things in the right place. It's so weird. I think it's a really interesting part of developing electric vehicles that is going to be part of the development journey, these kind of questions. And I think, like, in terms of touchscreen versus buttons, that's not, you know, it's not affecting the necessary functionality of the car, you know, like at the end of the day, if you have...
It's an additional
rather than is my car working. But I do think it's important for companies like Hyundai to do this kind of research, because I think it's almost like a natural innovative progression. You can see where people are going with, like, oh, we're going electric, we're going like really clean, futuristic silhouettes and insides, we're going to have screens everywhere, it's going to be, you know, cutting edge technology. And I think it is interesting and necessary to go, well, do people actually like this, and does it actually work?
Yeah, and if it stops working, what can people do? I thought it was interesting as well that a few people have been suggesting recently that the future is actually voice control. Mm. I'm not gonna lie, I read that and like old me would have agreed and been like, yeah, sure. Newer me, take into account both of the vehicles that I had, I was using my phone in my sort of old car, my first Vauxhall Corsa, and it was on like a little mount, and I had my little like Bluetooth thing plugged into it. And like, obviously you can't switch your phone while you're driving. So to skip anything on Spotify, I had to go, okay, Google, play next song. Do you know how draining that was just to do that with my voice? Because obviously the music's playing as well. So I was like turning the volume down using the volume knob or on like the steering wheel, asking it to play the next song, and then just hoping the next song would be a song I wanted to like vibe to. And then the next car had, so the newer Vauxhall Corsa actually had a button you could press on the steering wheel that would cut everything out and just automatically start the voice control. And then I would answer and it would be useful, but it would take a few times sometimes, what I was saying. Or like if I got a text through, it would be like, do you want to answer this? And it would immediately sort of wait for my response to be like, yes, no. And I kept saying send, and it'd be like, can you say yes or no? And I was like, oh my God, just send.
I think there's like a lot of development that needs to go before I would trust a car to take
with voice control.
Yeah, because also as well, a thing for me is, even if I'm by the in the car by myself, I will mouth off people if they've cut me off or whatever. And sometimes I'll be like, you know, I'll be like, stop doing that or don't do that. What happens if I accidentally say a keyword and, like, you know, break my car? Oh my God, just brakes on the on the dual carriageway because I'm like, don't you go here or whatever. And my car's like, okay.
No, I get what you're saying completely. I think that's, and also I drive a lot by myself. What happens when you're in a car full of other people that are all having a conversation? Do you have to go, shh, everyone quiet 1 second. Okay, Google, skip next song. Like, I don't know, unless they've got some really good noise suppression microphones that are like pointing out of your steering wheel at the driver. That could be a bit wild.
Yeah, for now, I'm with Hyundai. Keep the buttons, please.
I like having the option, but maybe we're showing our age.
Let's move on to the next story, which I think is a really cool use of like multiple types of technology together. So they have created a digital twin of a historic Vatican church in order to identify damage that they can't see to the naked eye. So basically, a digital twin is where you create a copy or a model of something in digital space. And over a period of 3 weeks, they used drones, cameras, and lasers to take more than 400,000 detailed images.
Oh my gosh.
Of St. Peter's Basilica in Vatican City. And then they were able to create an exact digital replica of the outside and the inside. And then they had this model, and then they were able to use AI to go like assess this model and identify structural vulnerabilities.
That would not fit on my phone store. I don't know why that was my first thought. That's a lot of images.
I don't think that would fit on all of the computers that are in my work office, you know? I love the idea
and I really hope this works, right? Because that's going to be really cool, especially like sort of maintaining and restoring historical buildings. Imagine like even ones that have been destroyed, that you could sort of recreate them and work out how to restore them using this type of stuff. Yeah. I love how this type of technology as well, it always usually starts on these types of buildings or, you know, like big sort of cultural impact things, and eventually it'll filter down to sort of real people and real lives. Like, will this be used to help people, I don't know, survey houses?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, could it be a new form of technology where you can create a digital twin of the house that you want to buy and check out the foundations and everything in a very detailed way? I think
it... Or even the house you already own. Yeah, I think this is cool. But like, imagine, again, this is going totally off this, but like, if we can start doing this with buildings that exist, right? Say, for example, you create a really cool building in The Sims and you want to turn it into real life, you could survey the ground and try and work out whether you could build that.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, could it be reversible where you create a digital twin, you know, digitally, and then you're able to recreate that in, you know how to then build that in 3D space. It's a good question.
People already do that, but I guess it sounds like it's way more sort of in-depth.
Yeah.
It's taken into account like underground, like soil, like all that type of stuff, right?
And also one thing that I've just seen in the article that I really like as well is said that the project is accessible online. So it allows people who may never visit the Vatican to experience the Basilica with the same level of detail than if you went in person. So, because I do think this is going a bit left field, but I do think that there will be people that will start having conversations about travel and the environmental impacts of like long distance traveling in the next 5-10 years. And I think some people will make a decision to not travel as much because they don't want to have that environmental impact and that carbon footprint. So stuff like this could have a huge market because it could be people, you know, if you've got people in the States that are like, oh, well, I don't want to travel, or, you know, the huge thing of don't have the socioeconomic ability and the social mobility to
all the health
to visit. And then you could have like, you could have a library of the wonders of the world that you can visit whenever you want.
Yeah. And for education as well, you know, teaching children. But I do think as well, older people struggle to travel as well, don't they?
Yeah.
Like, because of your mobility reasons and stuff. So that could be quite cool.
Yeah. And also, actually, that's a really good point. Some historic sites are really inaccessible. So whether you're an older person or you are, you know, you have mobility and accessibility requirements, for example, going to Machu Picchu is something that you might not think is possible, or, you know, climbing the Tower of Pisa. But if you could visit a digital twin, and if they paired it with VR, so you...
Oh my God, I was about to say, yeah, hear me out if we found a thing for those Google glasses, etc. I was wondering.
Then I think that would be amazing.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. As soon as you said VR, I was like, you know what? I was, yeah, Bree's thinking the same.
If you could look in a digital twin of anything on the planet right now, what would it be?
Me, right now. Digital twin.
So like any building in the world.
Okay, I wasn't about to say a building. I was about to say something a bit far-fetched.
What were you going to say?
Which we can't do. I'd love to know what's going on at the bottom of the ocean. I don't think we can do that.
You never know, because it is, you know, technically creating these essentially maps and models is constructed using lots of data. So could you visit the Titanic wreck with this technology? Because you could send stuff down to take pictures, and you can use laser readings and everything to get all the measurements, and then you could go see it.
What about Mars?
Yeah, again, could maybe. Feel like we might need a bit more advancement on the technology that we can send to Mars.
What would yours be?
I think if we could do Mars or Moon, I would do that, because I personally don't want to go to space. So, I love space. I just don't want to be in it.
But last week you wanted to go off in a canoe. You wanted to be fired off.
I know, but I was joking. I don't actually. Please do not put me in a canoe.
And that's your birthday present, Ruin.
I had Elon Musk on the phone. He was ready to go. So I think that would be cool. I'm trying to think.
North Korea.
Yes.
Interesting.
It would be interesting. They probably wouldn't let you do that.
Probably wouldn't be accurate either.
No, but you can have like the Wonders of the World expansion pack, where you could go to like Machu Picchu, Taj Mahal, Great Wall of China, pyramids. Go inside a pyramid. That'd be cool.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
What is there anywhere in England or like the United Kingdom you'd go to?
I'm
somewhere in Scotland.
Yeah, but I'm gonna say no, because if I really wanted to, I would just go, you know?
Yeah.
I think I would use this for somewhere where it's like, oh, the flight's a little bit expensive.
Or you don't have access to it.
Yeah, exactly. So the team that did this for the Basilica, more please.
Next up, we've got more robot stuff, but it's recycling, reusing robots to basically help, well, basically use them to tackle the problem of electronic device waste. Mm. So it's quite an interesting startup. And what the startup does is manufacture and program robots to take apart products and separate the still usable parts for reuse rather than recycling. And I think this is a good idea, but yeah, I've wondered about this for ages. And you know when you like put the wrong stuff in like your recycling like bin and stuff like that, apparently you get told that just makes none of it usable. Like, I've always wondered, why can't we just start sort of separating things out? Or like, you know, those coated like drink cartons, and it's like, that'd be very cool because we've got, I don't know, some random plastic in them. Like, yeah, this obviously is devices, not that. But
also, electronic waste is a huge topic and a huge problem for sustainability. The CEO of this startup, Rob Lawson-Shanks, said he started to realize he was contributing to this massive 60 million ton problem of e-waste. That's a lot of rubbish. And, you know, and if you think about the amount of electronic devices that we create and then throw away, like singing birthday cards as an example, the big one is vapes. Terrible.
These vapes are getting banned, aren't they, in the UK?
Yeah, because like, which I'm kind of glad about, because it's either like you need to work out how to recycle these bad boys fast, or we need to crack down on them, because it's kind of
scary. Not like a cigarette that just evaporates, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy the amount of waste. There's so much other stuff though as well involved in that. Like, just on the topic of cars, for example, like when a car used to get scrapped back in the day, there was no computers really are the thing to kill as there was today, innit? Like, a lot of that would have just been like, I don't know, you know, metal stuff. Whereas now there's so many different intricate parts and, like, you know, sensors and all that sort of stuff. It's like, I don't know how good the recovery process is for, like, when, you know, send a car to get scrapped. Like, what do they do with all the electronics after? Are they just melting down, like, the metal and then getting rid of it? What's happened with old phones as well?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Do you remember at uni? I'm pretty sure it was at uni. Like, a lot of sort of, I'm pretty sure we had one module or one class where you would actually talk about the life cycle at the end of, like, you know, a product. And yeah, I would discuss how you'd dispose of it and how you'd recommend to. But I don't think it gets pushed a lot to consumers to think about that, does it?
No, not at all. This news story is about this company, and they've developed these robots to take apart components delicately so that those, you know, if they're still working, they can be reused. And they're also working with companies like Dell to design devices that are then easier for the robots to unmake. So it's like you're saying, thinking about the entire life cycle.
Reduce, reuse, recycle, right?
And apparently they're quite small. They're 10 feet by 3 feet by 10 feet. So they can fit inside existing e-waste processing facilities.
Well, I've always wondered this, because obviously, like, even with old, let's say, Christmas lights, there'd have been like a little circuit to, like, work out going on in there. Like, now you can get cheap Internet of Things or smart products on Amazon for like under 20 quid. Like, even these light bulbs now are going cheap. So there must be so many, like, devices out there with, like, little chipboards on them, you know, all sorts. We've not even considered reusing, because a lot of that sort of stuff can actually be reprogrammed as well, can't it?
Yeah, and especially...
It just seems like...
Yeah, especially with stuff like this, a lot of the time it's like, oh, the battery's gone and I can't be bothered to work out how to replace the battery, so I'll just chuck it.
So I'll just throw it.
Whereas the actual sensors or the timing circuit or the chip that's programming the LEDs is still fine.
Yeah. So not all of it needs to be scrapped.
Yeah.
But I guess, how would the average user know that? Like, obviously, we know a bit about electronics.
Well, I would hope so, as soon as we both got master's degrees.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, it can be hard as someone that doesn't know this type of stuff. Like, you know what? Like, it might be like magic to some people how the inside of a phone works. They don't know.
It's a really good point.
USB-C, like, people don't know how that works because they've never needed to, which is valid. So how would they know how involved it is to recycle it? And why would they even bother?
Yeah, so I think it's kind of like a two-pronged thing. We need to start, like, increasing education about recycling and sustainability and thinking sustainably when you're buying electronic devices, and then also stuff like this, creating techniques and systems that can recycle these devices for us.
Well, good job the Department of Education just got destroyed in the United States. Oh, Jesus.
Well, that, you know, don't worry, guys. Just keep listening to our podcast. We'll help you.
We'll teach you.
Oh, my gosh. And on that note, you've been listening to Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief. We'll be back next Friday with our favourite picks of the week.
Yeah, and if you want to stay up to date with us and all of our latest news, find us on social media. We're on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. It's Tech Girl Energy.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.